Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, February 27th, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, Mercedes Munoz will highlight First Friday and classes at the Canvas. Aaron Hood and Jesse Post will outline a climate change program organized by the UAS Alumni and Friends Association. David Lendrum and Pat Harris will preview Margaret Tharp's presentation for the Juno Garden Club about landscaping with trees. And we'll find out about Montessori Borealis' open house and informational parent meetings. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Montana's Department of Commerce is creating a new position to promote tourism in Indian Country. Nikki Willett of Montana Public Radio reports.
Casey Lozar with the Department of Commerce says the new tribal tourism officer will develop culturally appropriate visitor orientation and tourism services in cooperation with the eight Native American nations in Montana.
What this position does and what we've been striving to do over the last few years is work with owners and operators to grow their capacity to provide that experience, that Native American authentic experience for visitors from all around the country and outside the United States.
Lozar says recent surveys of leisure travelers show a growing interest in exploring Indian Country, history, and culture. He says the tribal tourism officer will work with local businesses, entrepreneurs, and tribal governments to update tour guides and maps and produce media for marketing campaigns. The department is currently accepting applications. The new officer is expected to begin work this spring. For National Native News, I'm Nikki Willett.
A South Dakota county with a high Native American population is working to serve that group through its hiring practices and opportunities. Native hiring in the sheriff's department is up, as South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Pennington County, South Dakota, stretches for more than 100 miles in the western part of the state. The Sheriff's Department of Rapid City has released its annual report. It shows 2017 crime statistics, work that officials have done on community policing, and hiring practices. Sheriff Kevin Tomes says an effort to have more Native Americans involved in local law enforcement is working.
The Native American population in Pennington County is about 10%, but if you look at our jail population and our detox center and our juvenile services center, it represents over 50%. So it's important that we have, you know, the representation, you know, reflective of the population we're serving. Our human resources office has done an excellent job in recruiting in those areas, and we've partnered with Oglala Lakota College, where we go up there on the campus periodically and just host a table and talk about the different programs we have and jobs that students may be interested in, and that's been productive.
The 2017 report shows tribal policing as a major benchmark in Pennington County. That includes increased cooperation between the county and tribal officers and greater warrant resolution. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
A Lawrence, Kansas school's name will be changed in honor of Olympic gold medalist Billy Mills. The Lawrence Board of Education voted Monday to rename South Middle School to Billy Mills Middle School. School board members say it's more than just changing the name. It's part of efforts to improve education for Native students and highlight the contributions of Native Americans to the city. Mills is a graduate of Haskell and KU and is an advocate for Native youth. The U.S. House passed the Amber Alert in Indian Country Act on Monday, which includes grant funding to be used to integrate tribal alerts with state systems for better communication. The Navajo Nation is among tribes advocating for the bill. According to the tribe's Washington, D.C. office, lawmakers changed the title of the bill to include the name of an 11-year-old Navajo girl who was kidnapped and murdered on tribal land in New Mexico in 2016. The Ashland Mike Amber Alert in Indian Country Act now goes to the Senate. Navajo leaders are applauding the House for its passage and are urging the Senate to do the same. The tribe is currently working on an alert system. Late last year, the tribe signed a contract to purchase software to allow the tribe to issue its own alerts, which will be run by the Navajo Emergency Management and Public Safety Departments. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by BNSF Railway, moving our economy for over 165 years. Our vision is to operate injury and accident-free with safety programs, training, and technology. More at bnsf.com/tribal relations. Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills. With rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 27th, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. And here in the studio now with me is Mercedes Munoz. She's the gallery director over at the Canvas. Welcome to the show, Mercedes.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you here. So it's First Friday this week again.
Came up quick.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about that in classes. Where would you like to start?
Well, I'll start with First Friday. This is a very special First Friday. We are celebrating 10 years in operation for the Canvas.
Wow.
So this exhibit is going to be a culmination of over 20 artists who have showed at the Canvas in the past. That's going to include lots of community members who are still active in the Juneau Arts scene, and some of the Canvas artists that we serve as well.
Okay. Do a few of those names come to mind?
Sure, absolutely. Let's see. We have Chris Taylor, Avril Valise, Elise Tomlinson, Jessica Hanlon, some of the Canvas folks. We have Grace Conrad, Niall Johnson, Alex Botello, Glorimar Ramirez, Toby Weston, okay, I'm going to leave it there. There's
okay.
A lot of people.
a lot of great artists' names there. What are some of the mediums that come to mind when you think of those artists?
Well, we're going to have some pottery. So a few of those 3D artists are going to have pieces. Another very cool piece we're going to have by Reed Harris is going to be a 30-inch by 22-inch wide tea table. So that's going to be a handcrafted table in the middle of the gallery. We also have a guitar by George Gress. We have some oil painting, watercolor paintings, drawings, acrylic. It's just about everything in there, which is going to make it really fun.
Wow. So when you think about 10 years of the Canvas's existence, what comes to mind for you?
Well, I've been here about 3.5, and I feel very honored to work in just such a wonderful place that does so much good. And the Canvas is really active in the Juneau arts community, and we really just, you know, stick to our mission, which is to be inclusive to people of all ages and abilities. And we do that through the arts and community events. And so I just feel very, very blessed to be a part of that.
So this collective show, is
yes.
that what you're calling it? Collaborative?
That works. It's a 10-year retrospective.
Got it.
Yes.
What time does it begin on Friday?
That's going to begin at 4:30 p.m. and go until 7. And that will be the opening night, but it'll be up through the month.
Okay. It'll be up all of March.
Yes.
Excellent. Okay. So that's a good place to stop on Friday. And going into March, what other classes do you have available?
Well, coming up, it's a little early, but they're already filling up, so I want to mention it, our kids' spring break classes. We always run a number of classes that 1 week. It's going to be March 19th through the 23rd, and we offer morning sessions, 9 to noon, and afternoon, 1 to 4. Both in the morning and afternoon, we'll have a beginning wheel throwing with our studio manager, Alex Botello. We have a morning hand-building clay musical instruments class with Luis Kunstada. It's going to be really fun, making whistles and things like that. And then in the afternoon, we have an outdoor painting and drawing workshop with Daniel Todd, who works at the Canvas as well. So we have a wide variety of classes, and the ages are the starting age is 8 for most of those classes.
Okay. And up through middle school, high school?
Generally, we see about Through middle school. Yeah, the oldest would maybe be around 13. Yeah.
Okay, so a great way to spend time over spring break when maybe parents or guardians are still working and the kids have the time off, right?
Yes, definitely. And one thing that's really cool about our spring break youth programming is that this is partially funded through the CBJ Youth Activities Grant. So because of that, we're able to offer scholarships, one for each class, to students who are interested in taking art classes but just don't have the resources to make that happen. So if there's anybody that's interested in taking those classes, it's just a simple form on our website, or you can come in and fill it out, and we'll offer one free spot for each class.
Imagine a kid signs up for a morning session. They'll probably go to that morning session all week, right?
Yes.
What's the average cost for something like that?
Between $150 and $210, okay, depending on the class.
Okay. And do you find that kids take a morning and an afternoon session, or will they just take one or the other?
We definitely see that a lot of the time.
Taking
and
both.
Our gallery's open, so we'll have kids just hanging out, eating lunch in the gallery, or going with their parents during that that break time, which is great, too. So we'll see a mix of both, but definitely I think kids that are really interested in the arts will get them the whole week, which is fantastic.
All right, so that's March 19th through the 23rd, spring break classes for kids at the campus.
Yes.
Any other classes on your calendar?
Yeah, a couple things we have coming up. Our studio manager, Alex Patello, is going to teach a flatware workshop. So that's going to be on Sundays from 12 to 3 p.m., and that's just 2 days, March 4th and the 4th and the 11th. And so you can learn to throw on the wheel plates and platters, which look easy, but they're actually very hard to execute. So that's a great class, just a short 2-day workshop and gain that skill. And then another fun class that we have coming up is going to be with Patty Hutchins Jupe, who just had a show at the Jack recently, and she's going to be doing a ongoing watercolor workshop. And we're going to have that on Thursdays about every 3 weeks. And so each class, she'll teach a new subject. This first one is just going to be an introduction to watercolor materials and then going away with a small painting. So that's going to be a fun one to check out and kind of be an ongoing thing, like similar to our Saturday drawing group.
Okay, I bet all of this is at thecanvas.org.
It is, yes. Or if you come in for First Friday, we'll have some brand new printed schedules ready for you to pick up.
And just a reminder, this Friday, starting at 4:30, the 10-year retrospective, you're calling it?
Yep.
20-plus artists over the last 10 years of Canvas displaying all kinds of work, from guitars to tea tables to pottery to paintings and more.
It's going to be a wide variety and a really exciting show. I can't wait.
And that's up for the month of March. We've been speaking with Mercedes Munoz, the gallery director at the Canvas downtown on
Seward Street, right across from V's cellar door, in the same door there as Pie in the Sky.
Great. Mercedes, thank you so much. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, thank you so much for having me.
Mm-hmm.
There's no combination of words I could put on the back of a postcard. No song that I could sing, but I can try for your heart. Our dreams, and they are made out of real things, like a shoebox of photographs with sepia tone loving. Love is the answer, at least, for most of the questions in my heart. Like, why are we here and where do we go? And knock on me so hard. It's not always easy, and sometimes life can be deceiving. I'll tell you one thing, it's always better when we're together. It's always better when we're together. Yeah, we'll look at them stars when we're together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. Just might find their way into my dreams tonight. But I know that they'll be gone when the morning light sings or brings new things. For tomorrow night you see that they'll be gone too. Too many things I have to do. But if all of these dreams might find their way into my day-to-day scene, I'd be under the impression I was somewhere in between, with only two, just me and you. Now so many things we got to do, or places we got to be. We'll sit beneath the mango tree now. Yeah, it's always better when we're together. We're somewhere in between together. Well, it's always better when we're together. Yeah, it's always better when we're together.
This is George Kuhar. Join me, Taylor Vidic of the Quaintrells, guitarist-writer Avery Stewart, and rap artist T.J. Kramer, a.k.a. Manor, for a special songwriter's edition of Alaska Originals. We'll play an hour of their favorite tunes and talk about the writing. Doors open at 6, cameras roll at 6:30 p.m. at the 360 North Studio in the KTOO building, Thursday, March 1st. A suggested $5 donation at the door. We'll see you there.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Tuesday, February 22nd, about 17 minutes past the top of the hour. Here in the studio now is David Lendrum. He's representing Landscape Alaska, and also Margaret Tharp and Pat Harris from the Juno Garden Club. We're going to be talking about a presentation this Saturday at the Valley Library at 3 p.m. about landscaping with trees. David and Pat, welcome to the show.
Thanks,
you. Scott.
So nice to have you here. Pat, should we start with you, the Juno Garden Club? Did you sort of organize this presentation?
I did not organize the presentation, but I'm kind of the publicity person, so I'm going to be bugging you guys for a spot just about every month. We've had programs almost every month on the first Saturday of every month, and so this coming Saturday is this program with Margaret, which we're very excited to host.
About how many are you in the Juno Garden Club?
It varies from year to year. Probably about 30 or 40 right now. And it's a membership organization, and the memberships are annual. So it's $10 a year and good for a year. And we're just a group of enthusiastic gardeners and trying to beautify Juno and increasing garden knowledge within the community.
And with a long history of public work.
Yes.
Juno Garden Club has really been the stalwart kind of make things nice around Juno for a long, long time.
Since 1927. I wasn't part of that group, but yes.
And I imagine some of you have community garden spots. Some of you have gardens at home. Some of you are into edibles. Some of you are into decorative stuff. How would you explain that combination?
I think that's true. I'm mostly a vegetable person. But a lot of people in the club are floral people, flower growers, and so we have a real mix of interests in the club, and that makes it fun because we have a lot of things to talk about.
All right. David Lendrum and Landscape Alaska.
That's right.
How long have you been a part of Landscape Alaska?
35 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you are a nursery, among
We're
other
a nursery,
things.
A landscape contracting business, and Margaret's a landscape. She's got a master's in landscape architecture.
Okay. Where are you?
on the Back Loop Road up above Goat Hill.
And as you were explaining to me...
As you go driving from the university around the end of the lake, the ground rises there, and that's called Goat Hill. There's a little road there called Goat Hill Road. We're not on that. We're the next driveway past that. But it goes up on top of the hill, and it just looks out over the whole valley. It's a spectacular sight.
You have a few greenhouses back there?
Greenhouses, cold frames, big parking lot. It used to be an alpaca ranch when they built the home.
Really?
Yes, and there's a big pasture area.
It's called Alpaca Hill.
Alpaca Hill, that's right. It's been an agricultural scene for a long time, as long as there's been anybody there anyway.
Have you done some work downtown or in the valley or in Douglas that we might recognize?
Next door, the State Museum.
Uh-huh.
The new front on the governor's house. The hanging flower pots in downtown Juneau, we started that off many, many years ago. The public buildings in Douglas. We've done a lot of public work, and we've done a lot of private homes, too. And, you know, whatever it's called for now, you know, the climate for Juneau changes every couple of years according to what's going to be developed. Is it going to be public work? Is it going to be private work? Is it going to be maintenance work? And we do all those things.
I suspect, and it sounds like you enjoy what you do.
I love it. Absolutely love it. I've loved it all my life. I was really lucky to have been guided into this stuff as a small child. And then really lucky, too, to meet Margaret, who had gone through the same metamorphosis herself. We met as grown-ups, you know, but it turned out that we had interests in common.
And she'll be presenting on Saturday. Will you be there, too?
Of course I will.
All right. What do you think her presentation's going to be like?
Well, she's really going to talk about the kind of trees that are available for Juneau, both the varieties of trees and how to use them in the landscape, and whether you're going to have a residence with a single tree in the yard or whether you're going to make groves or whether you're going to shield yourself with them. Trees are kind of the walls and framework for our domestic architecture, you know, and sure. You use them a lot for both protecting yourself and enjoying the internal space, but also for guiding your views and blocking views you don't want to see. The Japanese are real masters of this kind of stuff. We pay a lot of attention to how they orient the trees in the landscape so that the highlights of the surrounding area are clear to see and any distraction is shielded. And so she's going to talk about big trees, little trees, native trees, fruit trees, and also there's all kinds of ways that you manage trees that are not just put them in the ground and let them grow. You can train them to do things. You can take a tree which would be a big one and keep it pruned to be a small one, or make a shrub out of it, or make a ground cover, a big ground cover. She'll show low maintenance uses. She'll show companion plants. She'll show varieties of other kinds of shrubbery that you can plant around trees.
And
all that stuff.
Probably be using slides to illustrate this.
Using slides, beautiful slides. And also have a lot of interaction in all of her conversations, in all of her public works, in all of her presentations. She's really kind of an evocative speaker and gets a lot of interest from the audience and a lot of interaction with the audience.
And again, this is 3 p.m. this Saturday at the Valley Library.
At the Valley Library. Also, we did plant the Valley Library, and that was her design also. And the trees at the Valley Library are flowering cherries of a kind that we found that would grow really well here, called accolades. And if anybody's interested, there'll be some pictures of those, too.
Oh, great. So,
yeah.
Scott, yeah, I just wanted to mention that the meeting on Saturday is open to the public. Anybody can come, not just garden members.
And no charge.
No charge. It's free. And we encourage you, of course, to become a member, but anybody's welcome. And I think this is a topic that a lot of people in Juneau are interested in. So encourage you to come.
David, if I may, thinking about 35 years, I bet you've seen a lot of trees and shrubs in that time. What was popular 35 years ago and what's popular today?
When we started, there were not lawns in the valley. The only really organized landscape there was the McDonald's that's just been built. And all that stuff, you know, at that time, people were hungry for the entire landscape, and they wanted big lilacs and big rhododendrons and maple trees and things to establish their presence. And now most of that stuff has been built. So now people are looking to infill, and they're looking for more fascinating and interesting things. And they're looking for smaller fruit trees, and they're looking for, as Pat was talking about the edibles earlier, you know, a lot of people are really into edibles here. And the fruiting shrubs, the idea of fruit trees is kind of hard for here because there's so many predators that like to climb in the trees. But the fruiting shrubs do really well. But also, what's happened in the larger world of horticulture is that this goes on everywhere, and the focus has been on breeding smaller, more dramatically flowering things. And there's been some work done on hardier plants for the northern climates, because it's always been kind of hard to find things that would grow in a place like this. And the new varieties of rhododendrons and the new varieties of roses are really, really fascinating. And Margaret worked out a plan for what's called the low-maintenance strategy for Southeast, which really looked at Eaglecrest as its model and trying to duplicate that in people's yards, not with the exact same plants, although you could, but that effect. So she'll talk about that, too.
Okay. Speaking of landscape, Alaska, you're open to the public, right?
Open to the public. Not right now.
Sure.
You know, but as soon as it thaws out a bit. I've had my friends and associates helping me keep the snow off the greenhouses and cold frames. Cause,
it's getting heavy.
It's getting heavy, you know.
Yeah.
But we've got about 20 big cold frames filled with stuff and several greenhouses and a couple of acres of big plant material.
So, let's see, it's February 27th, about, give or take, when do you open up?
As soon as we can.
Okay.
You know, sometimes it's the beginning of April, sometimes it's not till the beginning of May. But I'm looking at the end of March.
Oh, good luck.
All right, so this sounds great. That's this Saturday at the Valley Library, 3 p.m. with Margaret Tharp, and sounds like David Lendrum, Landscape Alaska, talking about landscaping with trees. Pat, what's your next one after that?
I'm so glad you asked. I was hoping you would. Next program is April 7th, which is the first Saturday in April, and that will be tool sharpening. Everybody needs sharp tools.
Indeed.
Right? And this will be at the Douglas Library, so a little bit change of venue from our usual Valley Library, and that will be Sylvia Garrity is going to be leading that workshop. So,
okay. For more info on the Juneau Garden Club, where should we go?
There is a Facebook page. I think if you just Google Juneau Garden Club, you can get the Facebook page. I don't know the offhand.
Sure. And David,
LandscapeAlaska.com.
Okay.
We've got a beautiful website that shows plenty of photos of the work we've done.
You do commercial, residential,
municipal. And we do also a lot of environmental work, habitat restoration. And I'm a landscape appraiser. So if somebody does damage to people's properties, they call me and ask me to come and see what's that thing worth.
Okay. That's David Lendrum and Pat Harris. Thank you both for coming in. We'll see you on Saturday at 3 p.m. at the Valley Library.
Thank you, Scott.
Looking forward to it, Scott.
Landscaping with trees.
Okay. Bye.
This is Bird Note. It's late winter, and cranes are calling loudly to one another. 15 species of cranes are spread across the world, everywhere but Antarctica and South America. Soon, they'll start their spring migration, but for now, they gather in large groups, foraging and resting together by the thousands. Here are a few of those voices from across the globe. In North America, the sandhill crane. Saurus cranes reside year-round in India, Southeast Asia, and Australia. The common crane winters in Africa, Southern Europe, and Asia. Demoiselle cranes winter from Africa to India and Mongolia. Most of the world's hooded cranes winter at one reserve on Japan's southern island of Kyushu, calling together around sunset. Few birds' voices can evoke the spirit of the wild like the voices of cranes. For BirdNote, I'm Mary McCann. BirdNote listeners are taking a once-in-a-lifetime journey to the Galapagos, and you can join us in July 2018. Trip details and more at birdnote.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 27th.
KTOO fans, this is Paula Poundstone of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I'm heading to Juneau to do a special performance for the station this March 8th at Centennial Hall. The show starts at 7 p.m. Tickets are going fast, so don't miss out. Get yours at ktoo.org, the station, and the jack. Woo-da hoo-da!
You're listening to Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 27th, about 25 minutes until the top of the hour. Here in Studio A is Aaron Hood. He's a professor of environmental science and geography at UAS. And Jesse Post, who is the UAS Alumni Relations Manager. And we're going to be talking about alumni relations and the Friends Association and also a presentation this Thursday out at the university by Aaron on climate change. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thanks, Scott, for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. Jesse, should we start with you, the UAS Alumni and Friends Association? What are you all about?
Yeah, thanks. The UAS Alumni and Friends Association is a nonprofit organization. We're very inclusive. You don't have to be an alumni. You can be a friend and supporter. It's dues-paying membership, but we promote staying engaged and connected with the university, and we do that through providing meaningful and relevant programming. We do a lot of fundraising for student scholarships, and this upcoming event is just a really relevant, timely topic, and we thought it would be great. We really like to partner with UAS faculty to highlight the good work at UAS.
About how many of you are there, would you say?
Members,
yeah,
or alumni?
Good question.
Okay.
UAS Alumni and Friends,
yeah,
in that association.
We have over 300 members, but there are over 8,000 alumni at UAS.
Okay. So. All right. And so among the things that you organize is something like Aaron's going to be doing on Thursday night, right?
Right. So we're hosting it. We had heard Aaron speak on this topic to a little bit smaller UAS audience, and we really thought this would be a great topic, a great learning experience for the larger community and not just members. We're inviting members and the larger community. It's free and open to the public.
Okay. Aaron, before we get to the nuts and bolts of your talk on Thursday, tell us a little bit about the classes you teach at the university.
That's a good question. So this semester I'm teaching a class on snow hydrology, which has been extremely challenging until about the last week and a half. We had to keep canceling the labs. So that's just a look at everything from snowpack development, avalanches. We talk about a lot of relevant issues in Juneau in terms of, you know, all the avalanche paths that we have downtown, things like that. I'm teaching a seminar on careers for students, where I have people come in and speak that are doing in a variety of different environmentally related fields, and just talk with the students about their background, how they got interested in it, and what kind of education they got, and internships and that sort of thing. And it's been working out. It's actually the first time I've taught it. I think it's working out really well. The student response has been good, and the people that have come and talked in the class, I think, have really enjoyed it.
You were talking about your snow hydrology class and having to cancel labs, and what a weird winter we're having here, right? Does a winter like this make you think of climate change in a different view, or is this an outlier? What are you thinking right now?
You know, it's really hard to say. There's so much variability here, and I think what I usually tell people is that in the future, we're moving towards a world in Southeast Alaska where it's going to be warmer and we're probably going to have less snow. But in getting to that future, there's still going to be huge ups and downs. And so, you know, if you look at the entire snow record in Juneau going back to about 1940, two of the biggest, snowiest winters we've had are within the last 10 years. And so it's not like we're already in this place where we're not going to see any more snow. But certainly as we see the climate warming, we're probably going to have lower snow winters over time.
Thinking about your talk on Thursday, is this going to be what you're covering? Or?
Yeah, I'm going to talk probably a little more about some work that we've been doing on glaciers and streams, and just trying to understand how glacier change is influencing streams, a little bit related to estuaries. I'll probably talk a little bit about some of the ongoing work at the Suicide Basin, the impacts of the Mendenhall outburst flood that we've seen there. And then Brian Buma, who's a forest ecology professor, is going to talk about climate change as it relates to forest ecology in Southeast Alaska. So if we think about the Tongass, what are some of the forest responses? And he's going to bring in examples from work he's done in Glacier Bay, and also on yellow cedar decline, which is an issue throughout the region.
What interests you most at work right now, either by through teaching or being out in the field, your labs?
That's a good question. I think this semester I've really been enjoying the teaching and getting out now that we got some snow and just seeing how excited people are to learn about snow. And I think when you'd say, people say to you, oh, you teach a whole class on snow? Is there really that much to learn about snow? And I find every week I think, oh my gosh, we didn't even cover everything I wanted to cover in that. So that's been a really good experience. And I'm also really excited about some of the work we're doing on, you know, the glacier change stuff. That's an ongoing project, and we're trying to get some new grants and really do a better job of understanding change as it goes from the ice field all the way down into estuaries and looking at this whole linked ecosystem that we're interested in.
When those people ask you, you can do a whole semester on snow, what surprises them most about snow science or snow hydrology often?
I think just the complexity and all the processes that you have to understand how snowpacks develop. I mean, we start up in the atmosphere and we look at, well, how do snow crystals even develop in the atmosphere? And people don't ever think about that and the differences from developing snow versus rain. And then you get down in the ground and there's all these complexities about the way the snowpack metamorphoses and what that means for, we talk a lot about water resources, but also, you know, again, practical things like avalanches. Which is certainly a big issue for us here.
Okay. Jesse, so can you give us the details on this Thursday and then let us know what else the association's up to?
Yeah, so this Thursday, March 1st, Aaron and Brian will be giving their presentation on climate change in Southeast Alaska. It's from 7 to 8 p.m. On the Juneau campus in the Egan Lecture Hall. So we look forward to doing that. And what else the Alumni Association is up to, we're focusing on that, but then we also have our biggest fundraising event of the year coming up on March 31st. It's our annual spring auction and banquet. So right now we are just kind of taking donations from local businesses and community members, but that's a great event that we have, and that's really our biggest driver for being able to provide student scholarships. For many, many years, the Alumni Association has been providing $25,000 each academic year. And so that event right there really is able to provide scholarships after we host that event. So, yeah.
It may be kind of obvious, but where did those scholarships go, and how are students able to access those?
Yeah, so the process is students at UAS apply for scholarships. I think the deadline was just recently February 15th. And then we have each scholarship has a committee that reviews scholarship applications. And so I have a committee from my alumni board that reviews scholarships. They'll probably be doing that in the next month. And then later this spring we will be awarding 10 students each. So with $2,500.
Okay. And so by becoming a member of the UAS Alumni and Friends Association, your membership dollars indirectly go towards scholarships,
yeah,
among other things.
One great way that your membership benefits their students, supports the university as a whole. So.
Okay. Aaron, do you have a title for this Thursday's talk?
Climate Change in Southeast Alaska is the title. I mean, I would say I think I would encourage people to come that are interested in the topic in general, because we'd also like to have somewhat of a discussion. And I don't think we're going to spend, you know, maybe 40 minutes or so talking, showing slides at most. And then we'd really like to just have audience members, you know, engage in discussion with us. So.
Okay. That's this Thursday night at 7 p.m. in the Egan Lecture Hall. Is that right?
Yep.
All right, Jesse or Aaron, if people want more info, how can they get a hold of you?
Yeah, they can contact the alumni office. My phone number is 796-6569, or they can visit the UAS Alumni and Friends website.
Okay, Jesse Post and Aaron Hood, you can see them this Thursday night at the Egan Lecture Hall. It's free to the public?
Yep.
7 o'clock. Anything else either of you'd like to add?
I think we're good.
All
right. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
ride into town last week. She came from the island of Martinique. The can-can she dances will make you fry. The can-can is really the reason why we're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The temperature's rising, it isn't surprising. She certainly can. She started the heat wave by letting us seat wave. And in such a way that the customers say that she certainly can. She had anatomy, made the mercury jump to 93. Yes, sir, we're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The way that she moves, that thermometer proves that she certainly can. It's so hot, the weatherman will tell you a record's been made. It's so hot, a coat of tan will cover your face in the shade. It's so hot, the coldest maiden feels just as warm as a bride. It's so hot, a chicken laid an egg on the street and it's fried. We're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The temperature's rising, it isn't surprising. She certainly can. She started a heat wave by letting her seat wave. And in such a way that the customers say that she certainly can. Her anatomy made that mercury jump to 93. Yeah, man, we're having a heat wave, a tropical heat wave. The way that she moves, that thermometer proves that she certainly can.
It's time to celebrate the powerful women of Juneau. AWARE will host the 22nd Annual Women of Distinction Gala on March 3rd at Centennial Hall. The honorees are June Degnan, Colleen James, Kuani Ma'ake, and Lori Morton. Doors open at 5:30 with a live auction and no-host bar, and music by Rob Cohen. For tickets, visit awareak.org.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 27th. It's about 12 minutes until the top of the hour. And here in Studio A with me is Emily Ferry. She is a parent of three at Montessori Borealis, and also Lupita Alvarez. She teaches pre-K. We'll get more details on that, Lupita. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you.
Yeah, so let's start with you, Lupita. Tell us a little bit about Montessori Borealis.
Yes, this is a public school program. We serve children from preschool to eighth grade. We are part of the school district. It's a public school. And we are an alternative program. So what is unique is that people from all over the city and borough can choose to participate in our program, but they have to go through an application process and a lottery process to get in the program.
And today we're going to be outlining some meetings where prospective parents and kids can learn more.
That's correct, yes. Okay. The application is going to be available March 1st, and it's online with the Juneau School District website, juneauschools.org. And people can download the application and learn more about it. But we are having parent meetings to give people an opportunity to learn more about the program, come to the facility, and a chance to see if this is the best place for their kids.
Sounds good. Get your pens out. Listeners, we'll get those dates here in a second. Lupita, Emily, why did you choose Montessori for your children?
That's a good question, and I always want to stress that we went to kindergarten at Harborview, and we had a fabulous experience there. So I don't ever want to say, you know, one's totally better than another, but I really liked the Montessori, let's see if I say this right, pedagogy. Did I get that right? Okay.
Yes.
their approach to learning, in particular, that the kids get to create their own learning plans, which I think is a really important skill, especially this day and age when oftentimes people are working independently. So to know how to create your plan and follow through on it, I think is a hugely important skill. And also, as my son said, Mom, I learn by doing. And they really get to learn by doing. So it's not just writing in workbooks, it's manipulative, it's moving around. You're not just sitting at one desk all day, but you're really engaging with the classroom, with your classmates, and with the world.
Lupita, what drew you to the Montessori style as a teacher?
Well, actually, I discovered Montessori when I was a parent looking for childcare. And my three-year-old ended up in the Montessori program that was near our home and was just convenient. But as my child experienced the program, I really got excited about see how the kids were learning and the ability to make choices, to learn what they love about themselves, and to find a passion for themselves and their life and what they want to learn. And so from there, I just love the idea of learning about the program. I was a mainstream teacher prior to discovering Montessori, and I just went and got my training and got involved, delved in since then, and I've been involved in Montessori for, a long time.
So when I think of public school or mainstream public school, it's often you have math class, then English class, writing, these kind of things as they go on. Emily, you had mentioned they actually get to create their own plan. What does maybe one of the plans for your kids look like?
Right. So, each morning, and this is all in theory because I'm not necessarily in there watching every day to make sure it happens, but in the morning they go in and they say, okay, so for writing, this is what I'm going to work on today, and for math, this is the lesson I had yesterday, and I'm going to practice that skill today. And for reading, I'm going to do this, and I want to do this research project. I really am interested about penguins, and so I'm going to learn about penguins. And so they, you still hit on all those subject areas, but it's more child-led, and then the teacher's there to serve as a guide where they're giving lessons that are appropriate to where the kid is at. And so instead of standing up there and lecturing to a whole group of kids, and some may be way ahead and some might be way behind, you are giving the right information at the right time when the kids are ready to really absorb it.
Is there a kind of kid that you've seen in the past, Lupita, that tends to do better with Montessori?
Well, I think it depends. We are all different, but if you are self-directed, if you have, ideas in your mind and you want to dig in deeply on something, that's the kind of child that would just love this kind of environment because, like Emily mentioned, if a child is passionate about a particular subject, they can learn all the skills they need by researching about it. If they want to learn about boats, you can do math in relation with the boats, how big the boats are, how heavy they are, how many people can carry, and so on. And so each topic can be opening a door for all your skills, reading and writing and social studies, when boats started back in history, what was the first boat like, and who knows? I mean, it can take it to the future. What are boats going to be? And so it really depends, what the child wants to work on, and their creativity and imagination, it's just flourishing because they have all this opportunity to do just something that they are really excited about.
Okay. And to learn more about this, it looks like the first meeting is Saturday, March 3rd. That would be this Saturday, right?
That's correct. 10 a.m.
Okay. And that starts off a series of four meetings or four opportunities to come and meet you and your colleagues?
That's correct. Yeah, the first meeting is at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday. you'll have an overview of all the classrooms, and depending on the age of your child, you'll have the opportunity to talk to the teachers so that there's more specific information on each level.
And then it looks like Tuesday, the following Tuesday, March 6th, in 5:30 p.m.?
Yes. And then the following Saturday at March 10 at 10. And then there will be a later meeting in April, the 12th. It's a Thursday, 5:30.
Okay. Emily, would you suggest that prospective parents go to these?
Yeah, I do think it's good both to attend the meetings, and then there's also opportunities to observe in the classroom. So that's a nice opportunity to see how things are structured. It's a multi-age classroom, so there's the children's house, which has preschoolers ages 3 to up through kindergarten, and then there's three classrooms that we call lower elementary, and so that's first, second, and third grade. All those kids are in the same classroom, and they're learning from each other and teaching each other, and then it's 4, 5, 6 all together, and then 7th and 8th together. So it's a little bit different than a traditional classroom, and worth making sure that's something that feels comfortable for you and your family and your children.
Okay. If people want to see these meeting times online or something, where should they go, Lupita?
The our website, it's part of the Juneau School District. If you look at junoschools.org and then look for schools, find alternative schools. Montessori is one of them, and this information will be there for people to be reminded.
And you're located downtown, right, between Harborview and the high
that's
school?
That's right. We are in the Marie Drake Building and the upper level of the Marie Drake Building.
All right. We've been speaking with Lupita Alvarez and Emily Ferry about Montessori Borealis. The applications are available March 1st. And then there are a series of meetings that we just outlined. You can get more information on the website, on the Juneau School District website. Is that right?
That's correct.
About these meetings. The first one, meeting to learn more information, is this Saturday, March 3rd at 10 a.m. Thank you both for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think we got it covered. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon. Julie Copens will be your host tomorrow, and Jim Powell will be here with details about the Arctic Winter Games. Enrique Bravo from Perseverance Theater will offer a preview of Spring Break on Stage. We'll learn about The Jetty with Dana Herndon, and Nancy DeTrini will be here with Arts Up. 35 degrees here in the capital city, and looks like we're going to see snow showers tonight. Thanks for tuning in.